No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots show that is on a mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that you care about and that are changing the lives and changing America's course for the future. I'm your host, recently retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years, but now I'm stepping into the light because what happens in the shadows is what makes the difference in the world. Together with my brilliant, very brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, we want to start a dialogue with America, and we're not going to tell you how to feel. We're not going to tell you how to vote. We just want to make you think again. We want to give you the information because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. Today, because I've been moving and it's been such a stressful thing for me and Mrs. Brown to do, we haven't had time to get a guest. So it's going to be me and Liberty talking about what's on our minds. I always think that's a good thing to do. Liberty Jones, welcome. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for asking. Thank you so much for having me on, as always.
As always.
Happy to be here.
So what's the most pressing thing on your mind these days?
You know, the most pressing thing on my mind these days is the bubble of ignorance that a lot of us are trapped in. You know, it's one thing to be passionate, and it's another thing to be passionate about information you're being fed. That's called manipulation. And that's what's been on my mind.
Well, and it's so much of it's going on, right? I mean, It's just incredible to me. I just finished about a month ago reading Animal Farm, and I'm looking for a copy of 1984. But it seems to me from my recollection of the book that a lot of this stuff is coming true, and it's really, really scary. And now the thing that I worry about in connection to this is AI. Because with AI, they're not only going to, right now we're guessing at this stuff. You know, I used to be a marketer, and what we would do is we would find out what magazines you were reading and what other public information we could find out about you. And then we would make guesses about who might be sympathetic to our cause, who we might reach out to. But now with AI, they're going to be able to tailor stuff so it gets in there and pushes every trigger that you have. Don't you think? I order a t-shirt and the next day online I get 50 ads for t-shirt sale. You know, I mean, they're going to know everything about us.
They are. And the scary part is these AI videos and, you know, news broadcasts even are getting really realistic. It's hard to tell what's true and what isn't, you know?
It is.
And it's really unfortunate. I love George Orwell. 1984 is a great book. And I think that we really are. And, you know, I think what made the United States powerful for so long was how amazing the government was and how much power it had in terms of the people, you know, in a lot of other countries, the people aren't as educated politically. They don't have as much access. And the United States was always very connected to their government, right? At the end of the day, it's called the United States, which happened after government officials decided to put their problems aside. But I think that more and more every day that I see this, it's become really alarming because nowadays the stronghold is kind of gone away from morality and more towards power. You know, I have this brilliant book, and it's all about quotes from politicians, okay? And a lot of these quotes are very interesting to me because it sounds like something a liberal would say nowadays, when indeed it's, you know, a very famous Republican. And so I have a couple of quotes that I would like to share with you, and maybe
please,
you can share your thoughts. So this is either from a Republican or a liberal, okay? And
okay.
Or a Democrat. And you can share with me who you think it is, okay? The first one is about progress. This is the quote. "We are not backpedaling. We are front pedaling." Do you think a Democrat or a Republican would say that?
Well, I can think of a lot of Democrats that would say it, but I would think, I would think somebody like Walter Mondale said that.
Okay.
If I had to, if I had to guess just on the basis of what you just said, I would say it was somebody like Walter Mondale.
Okay. Well, actually, who is a Republican, right?
No, he was a Democrat.
Oh, so you think that it was, you think it was a Democrat? Well, actually, it was a Republican.
Ooh.
It was Mike Foster, the governor of Louisiana from 1995 to 2003.
Wow.
Yep. I have one more about progress, and then we can talk about that. "We don't want to go back to tomorrow. We want to go forward." Do you think that was a Democrat or a Republican? It's a similar quote.
I think it's a Republican.
Yes,
and
it
I
is.
think it was Ronald Reagan.
Nope. It was Dan Quayle, the vice president
Dan Quayle.
From 1989 to 1993.
Wow. Well, I have a picture of Dan Quayle on my wall. So I should have known that, I did some work for him. But this is the thing that I don't think liberals get. And that is that basically people are the same. They're the same. They're the same on the Republican side as they are on the Democratic side, and liberal and not liberal. They just have a different agenda. So they very often say the same things, but mean something, that's very, very different. And, there's an equal amount. This is the one thing that racist, I just can't get over that racist guy that we elected president of the United States said at one point. He said about Charlottesville, there were good and bad people on both sides. Well, unfortunately, that's true. I don't think he meant it I think he meant to throw up a smokescreen for the white people that acted so poorly. But there is truth to that. There are good people and bad people on both sides, and they act very much the same way. So it doesn't surprise me that Republicans say things that sound like they're Democrats.
Yeah.
How about you?
It doesn't surprise me either. At heart, we want the same thing, which is a better country. We want a government that will better support what we want from our country. But, this is very interesting to me because there's a lot of talk in the press and in the media about how Trump rebranded, the roles of the Democratic and the Republican Party. And I think these quotes are such a grand reflection of that. We have so many young people who are so politically involved right now who really believe that the Republicans always wanted a grand return to the mythical past like Mussolini, when in reality, it's not about that. It's about making the country a better place. And I think the slogan, "Make America Great Again," we've already talked about how anti-nationalist and how, racist, blatantly racist it is. But they've painted that out to be, they've painted their support for Trump and his innuendo to be surrounding passion and pride for the American people and the American country. Passion and pride for the Republican branch who has always led us to success, when in reality, we're following a celebrity. And these quotes are so formative of that. You, who are a politically active senator who spent his life trying to make change in the world, even thought the first quote was from a liberal, because it's what we've accepted in our current standard of politics. It's this big division of philosophy, when in reality, it should be about action, because that's what the government is about, actually creating change and not changing our way of thought. They're supposed to hear our thoughts and want to act upon that. And I feel like these quotes are so formative to realize that there has been a major 1984 George Orwell type rebranding of people's thoughts of government in general. What do you think about that?
I think that's absolutely true, but I think there's one thing that has been a miscalculation on the part of the people, the Trump people, for example, who are pushing this. First of all, the American people collectively are pretty smart and they're catching on. We're seeing right now that the majority of Americans, by 60 to 40% almost, believe that Trump has gone way too far with the immigration stuff. So, Americans are doing exactly what you're talking about, Liberty Dealer. They're looking at the actions. They know that food prices aren't going down. They know that what he's doing in arresting, he arrested a veteran, the ICE arrested a Iraqi veteran the other day and tried to deport him. That people understand that this is the wrong thing, and this is going to backfire terribly on them. And I don't know what else to say about it other than you're right. They're pushing in that direction, and they're pushing in that direction. The only thing that we have as a defense is that I think people are starting to catch on and say, look, this guy is not doing, he's not making America great again. He's making old white rich people, yay, great again, and that really is the thing. This is really a movement, in my humble opinion, that's rooted in racism, that people believe, look, when I was growing up, Liberty, we had everything. White Americans, I was an orphan that lost both my parents by the time I was 15, and I had a lot of people in my community that were willing to take care of me, that were, because I lived in a nice white suburban neighborhood. There were people there to help me. There were people that rushed in and and pulled me through. That's what these this is what these MAGA people play on. Don't you want to go back to that? Well, no, because America wasn't great for women in the 1960s, for black people in the 1960s, for, lots of other people. For me, it was great. But that's the sentiment that I think they play on. And their definition of making America great again is making wealthy people wealthier. And that's crazy. Let's add to that, that the way you get into government today is to suck up to Donald Trump. And he's got people in there that don't know what the hell they're doing. Headset, the Secretary of Defense, he is way over his head, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He's already made a couple of big screw-ups, but I'm telling you, there's more coming. Tulsi Gabbard is out of her range. Pam Bondi is, she's just a soulless creature. She'll do whatever. She thinks her job is to be a fixer, just to do whatever Trump wants her to do. These guys run like the mob, you know? Do you know that they're blaming James Comey for starting the whole thing with Epstein, right? It's like Comey and these other people made up this big drama that all these right-wing nuts pushed. But so what did they do? They fired Comey's daughter. Comey's daughter was a Justice Department lawyer who was known for her great work, and she worked in New York, and they fired her because that's what they do. They want to control the information. They want to get retribution against anybody that stands up against them. And this is all the way fascism works. And this is everybody out there, read it. If you haven't read 1984, read it, because Liberty Jones is right. George Orwell was a brilliant visionary. And unfortunately, he tells a tale that's becoming truer and truer every day. So what does this mean to a 21-year-old college student that this stuff is going on? What is your worried about? What is your worry about your personal future? I know that you have plans to continue your education and do other things and make great change in the world, which I'm absolutely convinced you are capable of. But what worries you about your future?
You know, I think it's very demoralizing for a lot of people out there right now. I think for the ones who aren't in support of Trump, everyone is really paralyzed on how to act, on who to help. A lot of people my age, we just want to get this show on the road. You know, we're working towards things and we're not fully there yet. And we really want to be able to get in there. But my biggest concern is, you know, about the message. People who are not Trump supporters are really demoralized by the country and its values. People who, you know, grew up with Obama, some of them don't even love Obama as they used to anymore, because it's like, how could you ever love an institution that birthed so much pain in our lifetimes, right? This is what we're witnessing. So I'm seeing a lot of beautiful, powerful public figures who I've always worshipped being less celebrated, because there's this overall discernment of not trusting the government. And I think that's really sad. You know, that's my biggest worry, is that we, the people right now who are in between starting their lives and growing up from childhood, I'm worried that a lot of people are getting demoralized. A lot of people are choosing easy roads because they think that actually helping with passion is unattainable. And that's not how I feel, but it's definitely a lot harder of a road than I predicted, obviously for many reasons, but one of which is because, you know, how are you going to find a job with helping people when he's defunding all forms of aid? You know, how it's just, it's a reality that I cannot comprehend fully. You know what I mean? To me, it's still a joke that we even allow this man to be elected official. And the saddest part is that it's because of the manipulation. Like, a lot of people who put him there were people of color. All the young Latino men, all the young Black men who won in the pollings, who showed up for the first time in their lives to vote for this man, were lied to. They didn't even understand the message of making America great again themselves. You know, they voted against their liberty because they were promised lower wages, which is the easiest thing to say to get people on board. Everybody wants lower wages. Everybody does. And so it's really disappointing. It's really disappointing to see that a lot of these people, too, who elected him decided to give up on falling politics about a month ago when they realized, wow, this is worse than we thought. A lot of people decided to just give up on following the situation. So they just gave him this power without even protesting the wrongs of their own decisions. And it's kind of like I'm seeing, even if the approval rates have gone down, there's a lot of people who don't even say that they don't approve of Trump anymore, but simply don't want to know what he's doing because they want to continue to live in ignorance, you know? And I feel pity for those people, because I think we're all the same and we all want a better tomorrow. You know, we all do want to make America great. I don't know about again, because I wasn't a part of that again. But I think it's really sad. I'm worried that hope is failing. And I know I've said this many times and I sound like a broken record, but I wonder if I keep saying it, you know, change will actually happen.
Well, you know, I think a couple of things. There's a lot in what you just said there. And first of all, let me tell you that when I graduated from college, and you're on the verge of having that happen for you, when I graduated from college, I had no doubt at all in my mind that I would find a great job and that I would have a great future. And I did actually go. I found a job with a law firm in the newspaper as soon as I got out of college. And, you know, my kids who are older than you, they laugh at that. They go, Dad, people don't look in the newspaper anymore. Okay, that's not how it works. And you know, so I think what you're talking about in terms of hope for your vision of the future is so important, because you're not going to achieve anything you don't think you can achieve. If you don't think that you can do it, chances are you're not going to be able to do it. So that what you talk about for young people is so important. Another thing in what you said is that make America great again is a misnomer. America's always been great, and America's still great, but it's getting less great internationally. You know that I've traveled, I've spoken in Scotland and Portugal and India and Brazil. I've been all over the world to speak as an elected official, and people have great hope in America. Everywhere you go, people look to America for inspiration and for help. This is starting to go away. This is my big fear. And hopefully I'll be able to get Admiral Sestak, who was a presidential candidate and head of the fleet that was in the Middle East, in the Mediterranean and in the Gulf, to come and speak to this. But internationally, we're just losing so much ground. First of all, who starts a fight with the Canadians? You know, this is like, you know, I hate to say it, but this is like bitch slapping your favorite aunt. You know, they're nothing but nice to us. We have a trade surplus with them. This crazy man has put a 50% tariff on Brazil because he doesn't like them prosecuting the former president who attempted to do exactly what he attempted to do, you know, and neither one of them are successful, thank God. But, you know, and now the Brazilian president's on, the former president's on trial. So Trump doesn't like that. So he's going to put a 50% tariff on Brazil so that we can get rid of our trade imbalance. But unfortunately, the trade imbalance really is that Brazil buys $5 billion more in things from us than we buy from them. So there's a trade surplus again. The stuff he's doing doesn't make sense. It's all personal. And I think this is their Achilles heel, is that they really think that government can be run like a business. And it can't be run like a business. You hear Republicans say it all the time. You know, it's government's inefficient and business is more efficient. And yes, business is more efficient. But if you could run government like a business, you wouldn't need government. You need government. It has a totally different role. So these guys kind of believe that, and they don't know what they're doing. They're screwing everything up. I mean, this guy, how many tens of millions of dollars worth of ordnance did we drop on Iran? And I don't think we did anything to their nuclear capability. you know, if that was the purpose of it, because these people don't know what they're doing. Somebody said to Donald Trump, hey, we got a big old bomb. It's like really big, man. It's like, you know, and he acted like a college frat boy. Oh, boy, let's drop it on somebody and see what the hell happens. Well, sorry, Don. First, they moved all the nuclear material to begin with. And second of all, the bomb didn't penetrate down to where it was supposed to penetrate. So, you know, this is a scary thing. And our allies who relied on us for 50 years, 75 years since the Second World War, no longer feel safe, I think. And that's my big worry. Our two biggest trading partners are Canada and Mexico, and Donald Trump has attacked them both. You know, what about your priorities? When I was your age, we wanted to get married, have families, buy a house, be, you know, all the things that I've done and many of my peers have done. But it seems to me that that's not what young people think about anymore. Do you think about that? Do you think about you want to raise a family and have a house and have a career? And are these the things that you want as well?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I think that ties a lot to feminism, actually, and how it's evolved over time. But those are the last things on my mind. I think my priority right now, and a lot of my peers in DC, you know, it's a very active city, is to protect the vulnerable. Because more and more every day, the vulnerable becomes even greater and greater and multiplies in ways that I didn't even know was possible at this point. And I think that maybe it's, you know, I think 100 years ago, my priority would be finding a husband. And so I think feminism has a lot to do with it, because women are raised nowadays to be independent, whether that be financially or just in life. And so that's not a priority of mine, because as distant, you know, that is more distant to me than being able to protect vulnerable people. And I think when you were growing up, it was a lot more distant to you to create real change than it was to build a family, which is how you're supposed to live life. You know, us human beings are here to procreate. For me, the idea of buying a house, that's just, I don't even think about that. I don't even think about that. Having kids, don't even think about that. How am I going to have a kid if I don't even have money? You know what I mean? And so I think now the vulnerable have grown so much more, whether it be because of social media, we're sharing more voices, or whether it be because of inequality rates increasing, it's a lot more easier for me to know that I can help someone. And that makes me feel accomplished. I think the world has become very grim. Prince said the world is going to end in 1999. And I think we definitely started a different wave of it. But truly, I think it's interesting what you brought up about the world being against the United States right now, because that's true. And, you know, we've talked about this before. The United States was the world's greatest superpower. That's why everybody wanted to live here, because they wanted to be a part of the great economy. And that's what made them great, that they had a good relationship with the world, that they helped the world out, and therefore the world helped them back. That's the basic laws of physics and energy. You know, you give, you receive. And that's why it's so troubling what's going on right now, because a country so powerful thinks that the best way to gain power is to ice out everybody else in the world. Brazil is another country who doesn't have problems with anyone. You know what I mean? If anything, they were only a part of one war and it was on the wrong side, so we're not going to talk about it. But they don't have problems with anyone. And I have another quote from you that ties into this. You tell me whether you think it's a Republican or a Democrat and who it was. Yeah. Okay? It's about
all right, trade. I'm ready.
It is very important for folks to understand that when there's more trade, there's more commerce.
I would say that was a Republican, and
Okay.
I would again guess Ronald Reagan.
Well, you were right. It's a Republican, but it was actually George W. Bush.
Oh, George W. Bush.
Which is another fact. Like, we have completely decided to unlearn any. I'm a political science student, and I don't think what I'm learning is even applicable to the government that I'm seeing in action right now. So, we have really unlearned the premise of government, and we've learned to accept celebrity figures and clickbait as the form of rule. And that is very alarming to me. My question to you is, with years of experience, have you ever seen something like this happen? Have you ever felt this way that I'm feeling? Or is this also really shocking to you?
Well, it's shocking to me, but I do know as a student of history that it has happened before. And what Donald Trump does is he plays on the lowest common denominator. He plays on people's misogynistic feelings and racist feelings. Unfortunately, we're still a racist nation in a lot of ways. And this is universal. I mean, come on, this is about people. You can go right now, there's two groups of Semites in the Middle East that are trying to kill each other. And that's the Jews, the Israelis, and the people of Gaza. They're cut from the same cloth. They're brothers and sisters, but they're trying to kill each other. The same thing is going on in Ukraine. Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. These are the same. These people come from a common background, and they were all part of the same society at one time. Not in the distant future, not in the distant past, rather, just a few years ago. So this is not uncommon. And he's playing on this, and this is the lowest common denominator that's always been used in politics. One of my favorite politicians was a guy named Huey Long, who was a senator from Louisiana, who used to say, "Your house could burn down, your baby could drown." And not one of those Frenchmen, because the French ran New Orleans in those days, would give a damn. And that's what Trump is saying. He's saying the same thing that McCarthy said, and the same thing that Huey said, and the same thing that many politicians have said over the years. It's not your fault. It's that, in this case, that brown person or that woman that took your job. We're going to get rid of DEI because women have gotten too much power. What the hell? And people are like, yeah, what the hell are you talking about? Women still don't make as much as men do. They don't make as much on a dollar. When I was in college, it was 76 cents on a dollar. Today, it might be 85 cents on the dollar, but they're still not even equal yet. We cannot pass the Equal Rights Amendment. The Equal Rights Amendment was proposed when I was in high school, just getting out of high school. I'm 71 years old. I'll be 72 in a few weeks, and it still hasn't passed. So women aren't equal. We need DEI. We need some of these other things that that government has put in place. And this is what those business clowns don't realize, that as they cut these programs, people will feel them. Now, the Achilles heel for the Democrats is the Democrats think they need to be more strategic, which is wrong. They need a new message. People are tired of what the Democrats have been saying, I think. And it just doesn't resonate with people like you. It doesn't resonate with 21-year-olds to you're feeling that you want to help people and that you want to enfranchise people and that you want to bring them into the system and you want to give to people who are disadvantaged. That's not a common feeling in America or anywhere in the world. I'm sorry. And we need more people like you. And there's always been young people like you, and hopefully we'll continue to produce young people like you. We were in the 1960s and 70s going to change the world, and we did a little bit, But then we, you know what? Then we all wanted big flat screen TVs and nice cars, you know, that I had a car that talked to me and, you know, made me feel more secure. And, you know, we wanted a house with a lawn. And so we all copped out. Let's hope that not all of us copped out, but a lot of us copped out. And that's the problem with capitalism, you know? I mean, unfortunately, we should have all read more Karl Marx because Karl had it right. Democracy and capitalism have a lot of problems. Communism is not the answer. Socialism is not the answer. Democracy is the answer, but there's a lot of, but it's fraught with peril, and we have to deal with those things. How do you feel about the that whole idea that we need to work together to make America better? I know that on a personal level, you feel that, but do you feel that students your age feel that? Collectively, do you feel that? And collectively, are you guys doing anything? I know you know, there's college students complaining about Gaza. There's college students complaining about a few other issues. But do you see that, you know, in the 1960s and 70s, we acted in unison? Do you see that same kind of cohesiveness in college students today?
You know, I think that we've moved away from interpersonal spheres, and we've joined spheres through technology. And so, yeah, I see a lot of people who are really passionate. You know, the people who I choose to surround myself with all are working right now towards making America better. But that's the thing, because we have such a powerful online presence nowadays. I think that a lot of people conspire online instead of in person, and that's a problem because there's a lot more restrictions and limitations on the information shared and on what's viewed and what is publicized and what viralizes. So I think that's our biggest drawback is that, you know, being able to share thought is the biggest way to, you know, create a social movement. And we're no longer really able to do that because we've moved to this online world where this is now how we interact. And, you know, they're going to restrict thought that opposes them, which we see every day. And I think that's really interesting because I think we're going to have to learn how to navigate that. And, you know, you mentioned that historically this has happened. And, you know, you're right. Like, the reason. I love history, and I think a really big reason as to why we study history and why it is so important is so that history does not repeat itself. And I think what's happening right now is really unfortunate because the extermination of Latino peoples, you know, a lot of people they're getting rid of, they're not even asking for papers. They're lucky if they're a veteran because then they have some form of proof that will gain them respect in the eyes of the current quote. Regime, end quotes. But, you know, I don't want to make any big, bold statements, but it reminds me a lot of something as terrible as the Holocaust. It started in ghettos, you know, it upgraded to camps like Alligator Alcatraz, where if you escape, that's the goal because you're completely surrounded by alligators, not to mention it's ruining the ecosystem. And so, it's just really unfortunate to me. That's why I ask, you know, my family line, they weren't all from the United States. And we saw stories of this historically, of this pain and of this isolation that the government has informed this regime that feeds off of people's insecurities and the way that they put people down, which is what's happening with the discrimination and all of that, this form of isolating people from each other so that what's most listened to is what they have to say. But I never could imagine that a country so grand as the United States, who granted the modern world many different forms of freedom, would be a factor in that tale that we've learned so much about so that we wouldn't make the same mistakes. And so I pray that the people around me don't decide to have their own children before. the world is safe enough for that. I don't want a kid to be raised in this environment at all. When if they're unlucky, they can be randomly shot up by missed bullets in the streets. Because now the best way to get rid of gun violence is to silence the bullets. So, I don't know. There's a lot of pain, and I'm really grateful that DC is still a very active place politically. I think most people who live here aren't Republican, and I think that a lot of people come here because they want to create change. And I still see that persist. I think when you walk into a coffee shop, if you want to talk to 10 college students, you will reach conclusions and you will combine ideas of thought on things that need to be done. And you will have positive forms of creating change inspire you. But it's nearly impossible to actually run with that when our media now is our form of really connecting, and it's super heavily controlled by the government. You know, Jeff Bezos was at Trump's inauguration, and he seems like an okay guy. We're not going to get into that too much because I have a lot to say, but he was at Trump's inauguration, and he owns the New York Times. He owns the Washington Post. Yeah. Which is a huge, liberal, technically, source of media. So that's very alarming to me, you know, how somebody who's in support of that is actually the one in control of a lot of the Democrats, young Democrats' source of media. And I don't know. I really don't know. You know, as from a standpoint, you were a 70s, 60s teen. And that was a huge moment for social movements and really inspiring each other. What are we doing wrong? How can we move past these barriers that are imposed on us? Just like in 1984, I feel like they're silencing us. How can we move past that and beyond?
Well, you know, it's funny that when I was in college, I had to write a paper on the difference between knowledge and intelligence. And, you know, knowledge is something that grows exponentially. This was my conclusion. Knowledge is something that grows exponentially and can be, institutionalized and gathered and, archived, and it's there for everybody. But intelligence is something that only grows evolutionarily, or I don't even know that that's a word, but it grows through evolution. So you can get a great deal of knowledge and not be smart enough to be able to use it. That was my conclusion. And I see that's happening now. And I worry about AI in that respect. But the thing that I think has really changed is that when we wanted to go out and have some kind of social protest, we had to have social interaction. You and I had to meet each other. You and I had to stand with each other. You and I had to interact with each other. You don't do that on the internet. And I worry that the isolation you talk about can only get worse and worse because we're disconnected. And the fact that we can be anonymous. I can say anything I want to you, and I don't need to stand behind it. I don't need to, there to support it. I can hide and behind a shield of anonymity. And I think that's really, really horrible. And I think it separates us. I mean, look, I've spoken my mind on Twitter. And I've had people attack me from all over the place, saying ridiculous things about me. Didn't even matter, you know? So I don't even bother going on Twitter anymore to state anything politically. I go on there and, you know, I might say, happy birthday, Liberty Jones, you know, or, you know, whatever. But I don't go and make any kind of political statements anymore because people are, you know, just ready to attack you without, they don't even tell you who they are, you know, they're jury 12968, you know, or cool cat 42. you know, you hide behind this veil. And so that bothers me. And that's a big difference, I think, that I no longer have to touch you. I no longer have to look you in the eye. I no longer have to speak directly to you. I can do it through all sorts of filters and other stuff. And I think that's the big thing to change. Because, you know, when you get right down to it, Liberty, you are my fourth co-host on this show. I wanted you on the show for many reasons. One of them was because of the age difference between the two of us. I knew that we would see things differently. I've had a Republican woman from the West Coast. I've had a woman that was just re-elected as a Republican from Arizona. I've had another friend of mine who was an appointee of George Bush, another Republican. And you know what? In the final analysis, we were all friends and we all had more in common than we had that separated us. But you never know that if you can isolate these things like you do on the internet, you know? But when you have to look at me and you say, you have to say to me, whether I'm a liberal or not, you have to say, this guy's a dad. This guy has kids that he loves. He loves his country. He serves the people. You know, you have to recognize all these things about me. When you're on the internet, you don't have to do that. You can isolate that one thing that you don't like that I'm saying, and you can attack me. And I think that's really, really the big difference, is we no longer have to accept each other, you know? And that's what we all agree to. We all agree to come together in the form and form a government of the people by the people. And, you know, that means everybody. It means that we've got to accept the people that don't agree with us, and we've got to work with the people that want a different future. But when we have to come in contact with each other and look each other in the eye, I think that makes a big difference. And I know I've seen you in action. I know you have great people skills. So what do you think of that? You think it's important to reach out to people and shake their hand and look them in the eye and tell them who you are?
I think it's super important. I completely agree with that, you know, and I think that's a very big issue. I think, honestly, that's even a component of why Trump is in office. You know, I think that a lot of people feel alone. And when you feel alone, it's a lot easier to put yourself above others and to blame others for it than to put yourself below others and seek help. So I think that's what we're missing in the world right now, is a bit of interpersonal connection. I think it's time for us to really join forces and create movements and protests in person live that will allow us to create some commotion and share some thought. And I really hope when college students are all back on campus in August that things will really take off. Because I think we've moved away from being paralyzed from fear and have accepted the defeat. And I think now it's time to fight.
Well, you know, and we have to learn to accept each other. And, you know, when I look at young people, I don't understand them in many ways. For example, let's talk about, I've talked to my kids about this and other young people about dating. You know, when I was a young person, you with the rare exception that you went to a bar and, you know, some social event and met somebody, you usually met people that you interacted with romantically, either through a friend or you worked with them or you had a social engagement or had some kind of connection with them. Finding somebody on the internet to go out with, that would have in my day, even though it was probably possible, it started when I was in my 30s, I think, that would have been seen as desperate, you know, like, oh my God, you went out with somebody you met on the internet, you know, and today it seems like a regular way to meet people.
Yeah.
I've been involved in commerce lately because of brilliant friend of mine has put some things on marketplaces I move so that I can get rid of them. And you know what? haven't had one person over the age of 30 respond. I've sold a lot of stuff. We got a real lot of stuff. We're just getting rid of stuff because we've been here for 35 years. And, you know, we don't sell for very much. We just want it to go to people that can use it. But everybody that's responded has been a young person, nobody over 30. So this is the way commerce obviously is handled with young people. But old people still go to flea markets, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I think we need to do things that promote personal interaction, that bring people together so that they can see each other and so that we can relate on the basis of our common humanity. You know, we all have so much in common, but you can't see that on the internet. You can only see the differences, and the differences can be isolated and brought to the forefront. And I don't think that's helpful. Well, Liberty Jones, I'm going to give you the last word because we're almost out of time. What do you got to say for yourself in closing?
Here's what I have to say for myself. I have to say that I believe in a better future. And that's the only way to do it right now. Since thought has so much control over us, we need to continue being optimistic. And we need to continue having open hands and open arms for the people around us, because the only way to share optimism is by being inviting and welcoming to all types of people, whether they are Trump supporters, whether they are Republicans, whether they are not. I think love, and I don't want to sound like a hippie, but I think love is the answer, especially right now when it's been so silenced, where capitalism has taken over all chains of media as well and made it even more addicting for us to not have interpersonal connection. I think we need to remember to love each other and make people feel loved.
Well, I think that's a perfect way to end the show. And it's a perfect segue to the song we're going to play tonight to play you out. This is Stevie Wonder with a hopeful song about the future. And let's hope that Liberty Jones and Stevie Wonder are both right. Here's Someday at Christmas by Stevie Wonder. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening. And we hope to have a really cool guest. We're going to work on it this week since Mrs. Brown and I are getting stuff moved out. We're on a roll. Maybe we can find somebody this week to be on the show. So anyway, Liberty Jones, thanks as always.
Yeah.
And here's Stevie Wonder.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.